Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel. It's Christmas week, and we're putting the finishing touches on the Prospect Handbook here at Baseball America Magazine. Jim Callis is in the house. The Zach Greinke trade's going on. It's just crazy. It's an action-packed week. I'm shipping presents all over the country. J.J.'s got all kinds of stuff going on. Family coming in. We know it's busy for you, too, so we appreciate you making some time for us here on the Baseball America podcast. I want to remind you, we're brought to you by MLB Network. And we have a Baseball America has an MLB Network offer, baseballamerica.com/MLB Network for this four issues for $4 offer. We also want to tell you about our Baseball America books, JJ. The tape gun is in full effect.
Ronnie McCabe is.
I can't believe we'd have ever picked it up in this room, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
the podcast nook.
We're one location where we ship out books from the same places we're putting all the books together, and so you can definitely hear Ronnie working the tape gun as he's shipping out book after book after book. And right
it's a good
now,
sound. It's a sound of commerce.
And right now the tape gun is at full speed because the Baseball America Almanac, the first of our off-season books, is here. It's shipping out. So if you've ordered one, you'll be getting it very shortly. If you haven't ordered one and you want to
What are you waiting
for? I was going to say, it is the chronicle of the 2010 season.
Really, again, baseball at every level. And it's not even really through the lens of scouting and player development. It's just a report on what happened internationally. I enjoyed writing up Cuba and the Netherlands and all the international leagues. We write up every minor league, the major leagues. It's a great record of everything to have in your hands. The Baseball America Almanac, really kind of the last book left of its kind,
right,
as well. Let's be honest about it.
It's what the Sporting News baseball guide,
yeah,
used to, the guide really, especially the one that
right.
did the Chronicle of the Season. It's kind of the ancestor of that, I would say.
Yeah, that was our progenitor, and we still crank out the Almanac, and like I said, the editorial deadline this week is for the Prospect Handbook. Now, the transactions deadline for the Prospect Handbook came and went about a week and a half ago, really the Monday after the winter meetings is when that happened. So the Zach Greinke trade, so for us, we're not constantly on the beat as far as that goes Prospect Handbook-wise, but we do have the trade breakdown on baseballamerica.com and a crazy weekend, JJ, with the Zach Greinke trade, kind of capping an action-packed offseason so far in Major League Baseball.
Absolutely, and especially the timing of how it came out. I do want to point out, transaction deadline has passed for the handbook. At the same time, because of how it falls, when we put the top 10, the Brewers' top 10 up on the site, it will actually reflect this trade.
And that might be one of the worst top 10s ever. It's one of the worst ones non-Astros related
I was going to say, though, we talked about the Astros top 10 from last year is significantly better than this Brewers top 10.
Well, I don't know. We'll see.
The top
how
three
out.
From that Astros top 10 last year, there's nothing to compare with it.
Jason Castro, Gio Meyer, and who else?
Jordan Lyles.
Okay, well, Jordan Lyles is good. Gio Meyer had a pretty bad year this year. I mean, I like Gio Meyer.
I'm saying at the time that we were ranking it.
I will say, see, here's the problem. Your new Brewers number one, I don't know if we have any drum roll, but
this is a fascinating one.
Mark Rogers. Love Mark Rogers, and I've always liked Mark Rogers. He's a long toss monster, and I've always loved that Mark Rogers was a big long toss supreme athlete guy in Maine. And the Brewers screwed him up. There's no other way to put it. I'm sorry. Now, he had his own issues. He throws across his body. But you still picked him fifth overall in the draft when he threw across his body. He threw across his body in the first pitch out of his hand. The high school season in Maine was 96 miles an hour. So clearly that throwing across his body stuff was working for Mark Rogers. So I don't know why you take that away from him. I'll never understand that. And who do I trust more? The guys who say long toss, I build up your arm strength. And who do I trust more? A guy with that kind of arm strength and athleticism? Let's leave long tossing out of it. A guy with that kind of athleticism where he was like a Division I soccer recruit and a University of Miami recruit from Maine, remember, for baseball. And a guy with that kind of, played hockey as well, and that kind of arm strength and athleticism, do I trust him? Or do I trust the Brewers' track record of developing pitchers in the last 30 or 40 years? Not to mention this current administration, I trust that arm strength and athleticism. That's a no-brainer. So I still like Mark Rogers, and I think it's awesome that he came back to the big leagues.
That being said,
but
that's the longest gap between
he
number
not be
one.
Your one.
That's the longest gap between. Got to be not longest gap for a guy to be number one.
Was he ever number one before?
I thought he was number one in their system back in like 2005 or 6.
I don't think so, because they had
Gallardo.
They had, but they also had Ryan Braun. Don't forget, because Ryan Braun's their 2005. Their next year's first round pick was slightly better. And they had Ryan Braun in 05 and Jeremy Jeffers, right, the sixth first rounder, who's also traded this deal.
The fascinating part of this is that
let's look that up. Think the, Mark the Rogers, magic of the interwebs.
Mark Rogers. 2000?
Mark Rogers never their number one prospect. It's been it's a rogues gallery since Ben. Nick Noogie Bauer in 2000, Ben Sheets, then Boogie Flower again in 2002. There's that pitching track record we talked about. Brad Nelson, Captain Caveman in 2003. Ricky Weeks for 2 years. Prince Fielder, Yo Gallardo. That's a pretty good run. Matt LaPorta, and then Alcides Escobar twice. And Escobar involved in this trade. So Escobar, Kane, if you've been living under a rock lately. Alcides Escobar, Lorenzo Kane, Jake Odorizzi, who was this year's number two prospect when it was first turned in. Then number one after Brett Lowry was traded. And then Jeremy Jeffress, again, a 2006 first-round pick. So Mark Rogers, 2000. There aren't that many 2004 draft guys in the book, JJ, at all.
No, I was gonna say most.
Here's a guy who's number one.
Most every 2004 draftee at this point, their fate has been determined.
Yes.
You're either an established big leaguer,
or you're kind of like
not going to be an established big leaguer.
You're available in the Rule 5 for the second time.
Right.
That kind of guy.
I mean, you know. So yes, he's a fascinating case as a number one. That's.
I mean, do I think he's going to make it and be an impact big leaguer? I'm not going to rule it out. I saw him in the big leagues. I saw his big league debut. It was Mark Rogers. Inefficient. A lot of pitches, but pretty wicked stuff. No, I think that, you know, he's got a chance. I still think he has a chance to be, I don't know. Like, in my mind, I'm sure there's a more recent example. Help me out. But I think he has a chance to be like one of these starting pitchers like Bobby Witt was in his heyday, where he's got big-time stuff, and that every once in a while he flashes – wow, knockout stuff. You know what I mean?
But in between,
he's going to have these four-inning, eight-walk abominations. And I think that could be Mark Rogers. What does that make his ceiling? I don't know.
That makes his ceiling essentially a number four starter who always tantalizes you and probably, you know, never – I mean, if it's Bobby Witt, it's large stretches of eating innings, but
– I think just the fact that he got to the major leagues last year – was a great accomplishment.
I mean, because we're talking Mark Rogers. Yeah, we're talking about a guy who was – there's a gap. There's a massive gap in his career.
It's not Josh Hamilton, but it's not far off. It's not 4 years, but it was 2 years of basically nothing. I mean, he didn't pitch essentially for 2 years because he was always hurt. And to go from that and get back to the big leagues in September, I thought was awesome. That was feel good enough. It's not a good sign when you're the number one prospect. But I still think – great trade for Milwaukee and potentially a decent trade for Kansas City. But I think no matter – we'll talk a lot about the Kansas City part.
Let's talk about the Brewers
part first.
So the thing with the Brewers is, yes, their farm system's gutted. But you know what? This is why you gut a farm system.
Correct.
To gut a farm system to fix – they have fixed as well as they can their biggest – problem at the big leagues.
Which has always been pitching because they can't develop it themselves. Yovani Gallardo, pretty much the only example since Ben Sheets.
Well, I was going to say, Ben Sheets whenever he was healthy, too.
Right. I mean, Ben Sheets was a great development, great job. They drafted the right guy, was 10th overall, got him to the big leagues quick, and he was good for them for a long time. And Gallardo, great story. A little unconventional guy with a little drop and drive and kind of high arm slot and all that. And, you know, when they drafted him, they were like, well, I don't know about this drop and drive. Lucky for them, they left him alone. But now they trade Brett Lowry for Sean Markham. I like Sean Markham. I don't like him as much as some people do because the fastball velocity is the fastball velocity. It's like a 45-ish fastball. But he's athletic. He makes pitches. The changeup's a difference maker for him. I think he just slots in very well as a National League number three starter, JJ. Now you got Greinke, Gallardo, Markham, Randy Wolf. That's a nice foursome. That's a better rotation than pretty much anybody in the National League Central has other than the Cardinals. So, to me, the Brewers aren't a lock to win the National League Central, but I think they're co-favorites right now with St. Louis after that trade.
They have to be considered, you know, a definite contender, which that's the thing that last couple of years, really what it's always come down to is, well, if the Brewers could get any pitching, they should be right there.
Right.
They never have gotten any pitching.
and never have, and now they should have pitching. And it's the last year of Prince Fielder's contract. I don't see them dealing Prince Fielder now, do you? This looks like they're all in, going for it, trying to convince Prince Fielder to stay here, maybe for a little bit of a Milwaukee Brewer discount. Where else are you going to find 25 guys that are going to go down like bowling pins when you hit the home plate, you know? But obviously, offensively, they're going to have to go find they'll probably go find a new shortstop because Unesky Betancourt. They instantly turned shortstop, where they didn't get a lot of offensive production.
Right.
And honestly, almost like they need to go get Craig Counsell back. You know, he'd be nice insurance to have for Unesky Betancourt if they can fit Craig Counsell back in there. But Casey McGee has done it for 2 years. Nice grinder, third baseman, solid production there. Ricky Weeks, despite the strikeouts, really came into his own. It's almost like Ricky Weeks should go play for the Diamondbacks. You know, he's a perfect Diamondbacks player. A lot of home runs, walks, strikeouts. Fielder, obviously Ryan Braun. They still have Corey Hart, correct? Carlos Gomez, I guess, goes into center field. Jonathan Lucroy established himself as a decent option behind the plate. Low-cost option, best part of it. And those four starters, John Axford kind of really helped solidify the back of their bullpen. Zach Braddock, they've got some arms up there, you know, who've come along. I like the Brewers. I like their team. I think they're going to challenge St. Louis in 2011.
Well, the key thing is in all these trades, again, they did gut the farm system. But they gutted the farm system, and really, I would say that the only guy who you say really hurts them significantly at the big league level that they traded away is Escobar.
Right now, yes, because Kane was better than Carlos Gomez. But they do have another option in center field. Again, at shortstop, we're talking about Betancourt just not a championship profile player. And while Escobar wasn't that in 2010, the potential is there for him to be a championship profile, especially a defender at shortstop. And he does, you know, I think the guy hit an empty 290, but 290 in his minor league career. I think it's conceivable that when this guy's at his peak, he's going to hit like a 260 to 280. It'll be empty. He's not going to hit for a lot of power. He's not going to have a ton of walks. He'll steal you 15 to 20 bases. And again, to me, he's an 8 or 9 hole hitter, 9 hole in the American League, but he's a guy who can steal you some bases. And I think his offensive profile, at its best, is not far off of what Elvis Andrews did in 2010. The difference between those two players, to me, is the makeup. He doesn't have Elvis Andrews' leadership and capabilities or just exceptional makeup. In fact, they're consistent makeup questions about Alcides Escobar.
And the other difference is that Andrus is doing that. What we saw from Andrus is Andrus is a 20, you know, is
2021.
Yeah, 2021. You're talking 4 years difference, roughly. So with Escobar, you're going to see the ceiling is significantly lower from the standpoint of, look, Escobar at his best is going to be an offensive minus, probably.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But
even at his best.
But if he's, you know, especially in this new decade, you know, we're not talking about everyone has a guy who puts up a 120 OPS plus while playing good shortstop.
Right.
That doesn't, you don't see that as much anymore.
No, you're not going to see that at all.
Right, and that being the case, you can say, hey, if you play, you know, if you're a 60 defender, especially if you're a 70 defender, you could make up for, you know, you can live with that. And that's clearly what the Royals are thinking here. But, again, with the Brewers, they traded away some talent in these deals. You know, there's no doubt about that. But, I you can't not like this for the Brewers, I don't think, because even in a best-case scenario of holding on to those guys, what you would have done is you would have held on, you can hold on to all these guys, and in doing so made your team maybe a little bit better in 2012, 13, and beyond.
Right.
But you're going to lose a Prince Fielder and guys like that, and all you're doing is so essentially your hope then is to get back to where you are now.
Right. Now, I agree. I think Doug Melvin and company correctly assessed this is a time for us to go for it. This is a time for us to make this kind of a move. And pitchers like Zach Greinke don't go on the market too often. And then the other part of it, JJ, I think you and I, we talked about it off air, and I know you and Jim Callis even last week, me and Jim talked about it yesterday when we found out about the trade. You know, Jim was like, boy, it took way too much of my time thinking about this in the middle of editing the Prospect Handbook, but it's fun to think about. There really weren't a lot of teams that could match what Milwaukee did. We have some Twitter questions about it at Baseball America or at JJCoop36 or at John Manuel BA, where people, you know, fans are saying, well, could our team have done this? For example, Doug, a Mets fan, Doug Plord, I don't know how you pronounce that, Doug P. Lord, I don't know. If Mets would have been willing to spend, would Captain Kirk, Neuenheis, Henry Mejia, Reese Havens, and Yuris Familia been a better package for the Royals? The answer is no.
No.
There's no shortstop in there. A, Familia and Mejia. I like Mejia. Familia is just like an arm strength. He's not even Jeremy Jeffress.
No, he's not close to Jeremy Jeffress.
Well, he's close because he throws that hard, but he's not close to as accomplished or as good.
Right.
Like Reese Havens is a nice offensive second baseman, but not a shortstop.
If you took that and you went player by player, you'd say, okay, Escobar is greater than Havens.
Yes.
Okay. Kane, Nieuwenhuis, considering what the Royals need, are about equal because Kane can play center. I don't think you could really say that Nieuwenhuis is...
It depends on who you talk to. Nieuwenhuis can't play center field in Citi Field. There's no way. That's just too big. But I think in a different ballpark, I think he can do it. You know, he got Aaron Rowan comps. If his high end is a left-handed hitting Aaron Rowan, I think his likelihood of being that is like 25 to 30%.
Right.
So, yeah. So, okay. Again, Kane is greater than, I'd say.
Okay. But let's even say equal. Okay. We're being very charitable here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Havens is more equal to Escobar, in my mind, than Nieuwenhuis is to Kane, but we're getting off
track. And I was going to say, and really with that, when you're talking about what the Royals need, Reese Havens is nothing
correct.
What the Royals need. The Royals have that guy twice over.
Yeah, you're right. They might be Johnny Giovitella.
Right. And they have,
times over, Mike Aviles.
Yeah, Mike Aviles, Christian Colon, Johnny Giovitella.
Right.
Offensive second baseman, we're
second
covered.
Base. Correct. And Havens might not even stick at second.
Right. So, okay. Then you go Mejia. Mejia versus Odorizzi, you got closer to the big league.
Yeah, I bet you would find some people who'd rather have Mejia.
I'll give you that one.
You know?
And then Familia Jeffress, I don't
not
think
even
there's
even.
No,
me.
No. Yeah, I mean, Jeffress.
Yours Familia is fun to watch, but he's more like a Henry Rodriguez type. Who the A's just trade Henry Rodriguez to? Pirates?
Yeah, I mean, it's not. Now we got another question along those lines.
So Doug, no, the Mets package, no, not close.
MLB Reports tweeted: compare Greinke and Markham traits. I like Laurie more than anyone that the haul Casey got for Greinke. Am I nuts?
Yes, you are nuts. I like Brett Lowry, but Brett Lowry's not a lock to stay at second base. Not for me.
He's a bat finding a position.
Exactly, and you know if he's a right fielder. Lorenzo Cain might have almost as much value as Brett Lowry. I think Brett Lowry's going to hit. I mean, he's going to hit.
I would say I'd rather have Lowry
than
have
Brett Lowry.
Yeah, Lowry
I don't think
Kane.
The gap is huge. And you're talking about three other guys? I mean, I like Sean Markham. That was I was almost surprised at how little the Blue Jays got for Sean Markham. I like Brett Lowry, but he's not an established big leaguer. And
I like that trade for the Blue Jays, though.
How much better is Brett Lowry, you think, than Aaron Hill? Aaron Hill had a bad 2010, but he was pretty great in 2009. Guy hit like 40 doubles and 30 home runs at second base. He's more athletic than Brett Lowry, I think. He's a better defender at second base. I was stunned that in a way that was what they got for Sean Markham. I thought the lure of getting a good Canadian like Brett Lowry kind of made the Blue Jays tip that in their favor as far as wanting to get Brett Lowry. But, man, I like Sean Markham. I like Sean Markham a lot.
I think Markham going to the NL, getting out of the AL East
right.
is going to be a nice little boost. Like,
that's
hey,
true.
I
thought it was a sign that the Brewers. I thought it was a good trade for the Brewers. I don't know if it was, again, I think the Brewers won both those trades just in that they need pitching. They got two American League pitchers coming to the National League, and those are 1 and 3 starters. It's hard to get, and to get a third starter for a minor league second baseman, even albeit an offensive second baseman. I thought that, to me, that's kind of a coup.
With Laurie, you're talking about, it all comes down to projection because he's always been young for the league he's been in.
Right.
And if you think he can stick at, I mean, there's been suggestions of multiple premium positions where he could stick.
Right.
We've yet to see whether he can. But if he can, then you are talking about, you know, but I think that a lot of his value does depend on not being, you know, shifted. Like, I know we have reports to say he could handle a corner outfield spot. He'd
right.
still hit enough to do it. But his value does go down because then, I mean, he's never put up the kind of year yet, at least, to say he's a true premium, like, okay, it doesn't matter where he plays, his bat
right.
will just carry him.
By the way, on the Twitter, as we're recording this podcast, Brewers agreed to terms with Craig Council on 1 year deal. That is called being prepared and covering your bases. Doug Melvin. Doug Melvin's got a pretty nice track record. Baltimore, Texas, they win the playoffs all the time when he was general manager in Texas. They didn't win playoff series, but he did a nice job there, and he's done a nice job in Milwaukee. So, best Canadian general manager ever, Doug Melvin. I don't know if there's ever been another Canadian general manager. But
now let's look at it. Let's
so
take it.
For the Brewers, we like this.
Yes, I don't think
great job. Mark Rogers, I think their number two prospect right now Kentrell Davis.
Cody Scarpetta, I think.
Okay, I think Cody Scarpetta.
And this just gives you an idea. Okay.
And it's like Kentrell Davis, it's like Scooter Jeanette, and we're talking about Matt Miller, who was like their fifth-round pick this year, might be sneaking into the back of their top ten.
This gives you an idea of how bereft of talent this is now.
Like, and the big thing is they made these trades, which I think we both think good trades for the Brewers. So they're getting their farm system, and at the same time, through no fault of their own, I've talked to Bruce Seid about this, I want to stress this again, through no fault of their own, they didn't sign their first-round pick this year. Circumstances conspired to work against the Brewers. They took a consensus first-rounder in Dylan Covey. He struggled down the stretch of the regular season. They aren't really allowed really to negotiate with him until the last weekend, because if you're going to sign a guy over slot, MLB doesn't want you to announce it before that. And then when he does his physical, oh, my goodness, the reason you were falling apart toward the end of the year is and you have juvenile diabetes. I mean, that's just a terrible break. If that had been discovered earlier, maybe Dylan Covey has the summer to adjust to it and decides to sign. Or maybe, okay, it's earlier, we're going to throw some of this money at other players further down our draft list. Very difficult situation for the Brewers. Is not their fault that they didn't sign
it's
their
MLB's
first rounder.
Fault.
Right. But the fact remains they didn't sign their first rounder. What Dylan Covey would, if you had a signed first rounder to be number one right now, would cushion the blow a little bit, is all I'm saying. And so it's a double kind of a whammy for their farm system, and very good chance they're going to rank 30th in the prospect handbook in the organization rankings, the talent rankings. Although I think actually in the handbook, they'll still have all these players they traded, so they won't rank them.
Not everyone.
They won't have the two guys. They won't have Lowry, but they will have Jeffress and
Odorizzi.
That's right.
But
on to the Royals, your expertise.
So looking at it from the Royals standpoint, the first thing I think you have to say, we talked about it a little bit, the Royals wanted quite clearly that they wanted to fix holes that they saw in what's a very deep system. If you look at it, there are very few players on the current big league roster that the Royals, I think, or anyone looking at it would say, these guys are going to be part of a playoff team.
Correct. And the other thing that obviously tied their hands, JJ, was Zach Greinke. Seemed like he had no interest in signing an extension there.
And not only that, but when he came out and said, you know, I've seen both ways. I've seen the argument, well, yes, he came out demanding a trade, but you know what, you still got him for 2 years, and so you could just keep throwing him out there. That's true. At the same time, it always, when a player does that, and especially when he has a 15-team no-trade list,
yeah.
You are better off. I mean, you are making a deal quickly where he may bend on that because the Brewers were on that no-trade list. Maybe a little better than saying, no, we're just going to keep you, and then he sticks with his 15-team no-trade list at the deadline or next year,
right.
Which – you want to talk about reducing your ability to deal a guy.
Yeah.
15-team trade, no trade. I mean, you've got 14 teams to talk to.
Yeah, that would have been a little bit of a challenge. I understand why they traded him now. I've gone both ways on that one, just like I think I might have just gone both ways on Sean Markham. I do like Sean Markham. I'm just a little bit surprised that I understand why. I think I almost talked on both sides of my mouth on that one. But getting back to Greinke, to me, I would have waited, JJ, because if you're looking so specifically – at shortstop and center field and up the middle positions, I think one of the things we've talked about this offseason is there's just not a great pool of players of that caliber in the minor leagues. And I might have waited to see what developed. I might have waited to see, at this time last year, Jonathan Villar was not considered one of the best shortstops in the minors.
Right.
Now he is. I mean, heck, last year I got his name wrong. It was MLB Advanced Media had him his last letter as an N, so he was Jonathan Villan. Instead of Jonathan VR, which would have been cooler to be Jonathan Villan.
Villan just robbed another
exactly.
Base hit.
Would have been tremendous. But, I mean, like, so to me, that's the benefit maybe would have been of waiting. I think your point is correct. You may have constricted your trade market for Zach Greinke by waiting, but you also may have expanded it if you had other potential trade partners who had shortstops at the upper levels and if you're looking specifically for a shortstop.
And really then the question becomes, I mean – really, the question becomes, do you trade for positions or would you rather just get the best haul of talent you can? Because the problem is that the best haul of talent, if it's – like if they'd have said, okay, we're looking to acquire players and the best haul of talent is – to give an example, and it looks like the Yankees weren't really in this, but Jesus Montero, who I think we all agree is a – I mean, That's the kind of the cornerstone prospect that you want. If you can get a cornerstone prospect like that in a trade,
right,
you really are building it around something, a great start.
I think so. I mean, that's a guy who's hit at AAA. He's young. He looks like an impact big leaguer. Now, is he going to be a catcher? We don't know. He's going to be make an impact with his bat in the major leagues. I think we're pretty confident about that.
That being said, okay, he would – Montero, if you're saying best talent, getting a guy like Montero would be huge. If you are the Royals – and you get Montero, and he can't stick at catcher.
What do you do with him?
You are talking about that you may have a situation where you have Billy Butler, Eric Hosmer, Will Myers, and Mike Moustakas, who are all these kind of big bat corner guys who,
right,
realistically, Moustakas is the only guy who's not either a corner outfielder or a first baseman or a DH, and you can only play a certain number of those.
Right, right.
What they did clearly is that they said, okay, we need, you know, we want a shortstop, which plus defensive shortstop, we had talked about this when I was doing the best tools for the Royals, does not exist in their system beyond guys that they signed who, you know, are 16 right now.
Who'd you put for best defensive – for best defensive infielder, who'd you put? Christian Colon?
No, because Colon's only – I mean, Colon at shortstop is –
fringe average or average.
45 to 55, depending on, like,
right,
the worst
case. How many points you give him for savvy?
Right. The worst case scenario is he's a below average defensive shortstop. The best case scenario is he's really average, but we give him a half a grade more because,
right,
he just knows how to play the game.
And most big league managers want a 60 shortstop.
Right.
They don't want a 50. They want a 60. Well, you could be a 50 shortstop if you hit like Derek Jeter or used to hit, or, you know,
right,
those kind of things.
But here's what this does, this trade does. Okay, they may not move him immediately, but Christian Colon's going to second base.
More than likely, sure.
I mean, unless Escobar
bombs,
falls on his face,
that's right,
he's moving to second base eventually. Well, what that does for you is, if you have Escobar, who, whatever you think about the bat, the, you know, scouting projections for him have always been that you're talking about an above-average defensive shortstop.
Right.
I mean, the question with him has always been long-term, is he a 60 or is he better than
that?
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, but so above-average defensive shortstop. Colon moves to second. At second base, there's pretty general consensus, and, hey, this is some projection because he's a shortstop right now. But the consensus is that you're talking about a guy who could be an above-average defensive second baseman.
He's got tremendous hands. His whole question is, how big is his lower half going to get? How quick are his feet going to remain? But, I mean, he's always been underrated by area scouts. There's
right,
no other way to put it. I love Christian Colon.
But so you could have plus defensive shortstop, plus defensive second baseman. Eric Hosmer at first can be a plus defensive first baseman.
Right.
So all of a sudden, by moving one, instead of it being a potential – Moustakas, I'd say the general consensus is that – if he's a 50 at third, you're doing well.
Right. I think if he's a 45, you're doing well. I think he's going to have to hit to stay at third
right,
base. I think the more he hits, the longer he stays at third base, and he's going to have to work on it. But his arm strength is going to allow him. He has limited range. Whatever balls he gets to, his arm allows him to make plays. I think that gets underrated
right,
when people talk about his defense. He can have just below average range and be good because he's going to make the plays on the balls he gets to. I like Mike Moustakas. It's not just because he's Greek.
But so what you're looking at then is that without this trade, you would be looking at a 2012-2013 lineup that, say, has Moustakas at third, Colon at short, Johnny Giovatella at second, Hosmer at first.
Or Mike Aviles.
But you could be looking at, like, a 45 at third,
a 45 at short,
a 45 at second, and, a 55-60 at
That's
first.
A great point.
Well, if you're bringing up – and they, I mean, hey, their 2012 rotation could be
all lefties, just about.
But it also could be all rookies.
Let's not forget, but I think it's do not forget that their top pitching prospects are almost all left-handed.
Yeah.
John Lamb, Mike Montgomery.
No, their top four
Danny
are.
Danny Duffy.
And Chris Dwyer. Their top four pitching prospects are all left-handed
right,
starters.
I mean, the only top pitcher they have who's right-handed, who's at a higher level, is Aaron Crow, and he's coming off a pretty bad year. So
right,
you're talking about you really need the left side of your infield to be good, and I think that hasn't been talked about or written about that I've seen in any of this. You've got a lot of left-handed pitchers who are coming. You hope two or three of those guys are going to be in your rotation by the time you're good, and that you need a shortstop. That's just the bottom line.
And to put another analogy to it, I mean, you know, it's a running, you know, joke or whatever you want to call it, but there's a very much of a Braves background in the Royal system, and you see, you know, like ex-Braves, you know, rotate through, you know, like if a Brave
gets Jeff Francoeur signing there was like the biggest like non-surprise ever.
Ever. But that being said, okay, this is a group that, you know, there's a lot of guys who came up under Schuerholz. If you look at what Schuerholz did when he left the Royals to come to the Braves, the first thing he did is said young starting pitching,
Rafael Belliard,
Terry Pendleton, Sid Breen.
That's right.
And what they said is, okay, what we're going to do. I mean, they had a shortstop. Jeff Lowser, 10 times better hitter than Rafael Belliard ever dreamed of being.
Correct.
But you had, you went, okay, do we want to put out the 210 hitting 65-70 shortstop defensively? Or do we want to put out the solid hitting 40-45, you know, shortstop? And they said, no, we want, I mean, with Pendleton, Belliard, Breen, then they said, okay, we're above average defensively.
And Mark Lemke.
They were above average defensively across the infield, and their thought was, that'll help this young pitching staff. Well, clearly that's what the Royals are planning to do here. Now, let's say this. This 2011 Royals roster is now epically bad.
Yeah, who's your leadoff man in that? You've got a projected lineup there. Mike, you got Gordon left, Kane in center. Who's in right? Oh, Frenchie. Oh, man. Frenchie might hit 3 on this team.
No.
That's not true. Billy Butler.
Who will ground into
who's their catcher right now? Is it
Lucas May, Brian Pena, and you could throw Manny Pena into that mix.
Okay. Wilson Betemeet might be their 3-hole hitter on this team, too.
He'll be the third baseman.
Escobar at short. Aviles at second.
Or Chris Getz.
Butler slash Kahui at DH and first base.
And a rotation of probably Hochaver,
Davies, Mesh,
O'Sullivan, Mazzaro.
Wow. Yeah, it's not looking great. Don't hurry up now and get your 2011 Royals season
ticket. I thought about this.
What they should do is, like, you get priority for 2013 if you buy 2011 season tickets. That would be awesome.
I thought about it. It's like for every 2011 season ticket you buy, we give you half off of a 2012 season ticket.
I'm saying
like
13 when we're actually going to be good.
But you know what? 12 will be interesting.
12 will be interesting. I agree. And this year's team, this 2011 team, could rival the 2010 Pirates for 105 losses.
But do remember one thing about that. Okay, Royals are getting.
But don't forget, we left out Melky. Melky will be in that mix somewhere, too. Not Melky Mesa, Melky
Cabrera. But
who now is, in my mind, the lesser Melky.
But you also are talking, they're going to have another high pick in the upcoming draft. And with this roster, I think you can very safely say they'll have a high pick in the 2012 draft.
I agree.
So they're going to have
the top of that 2012 draft. Anyway, go ahead.
But they're going to have the ability to add a couple more players, you know, that slot in with this. I mean, it's going to be a fascinating experiment to watch because you really could argue that everyone we just talked about, that Billy Butler is potentially the only player that we're talking about from that group, the 2011 roster.
Yeah.
You're not counting the bullpen. If Joaquin Soria is there, Joaquin Soria is the closer.
But you're talking about the everyday lineup.
The everyday lineup. You very well could be talking that, you know, because, I mean, Lorenzo Cain's not a slam dunk that he's going to be their long-term center fielder.
No, and they've been searching for center fielders. I mean, JJ, you do their top 10 every year. They have more like 80 runners who they think can play center field than any organization.
At the upper levels, you have, I mean, like, they got Gregor Blanco already, who is a plus defensive center fielder they brought in, you know, so he's in the mix to battle for a backup job probably now. They have Jared Dyson, who'll be at AAA now. They have Derek Robinson, who, I mean, the problem is they got Derek Robinson and Dyson both probably are at AAA now.
Right, right.
And then beyond that, they have about 72 other guys who could win track meets. I mean, but Billy Butler is potentially the only regular on that who will be a part of their future. But at the same time, if you look at that, I believe that the only money that they have locked up for 2012 right now is Joaquin Soria. Now, they've got other guys they have under control. But the only long-term contract left, I think Mesh comes off after 2011.
I think you're right.
And so Joaquin Soria, who's on a very team-friendly deal contract-wise, is the only money they have committed to 2012.
Wow.
So what that also does mean is with this roster in 2013, which I think everyone agrees is the year that if everything broke for them, it all comes together. Well, if they still have a hole left out there, they could spend $15 million on a guy.
That's a good point. They've got some flexibility on their budget as well as now I think a roster that it does make more sense. How confident are you, JJ, in Dayton Moore's ability to fill those holes at the major league level correctly?
Well,
because right now I think that Dayton Moore's track record as general manager since 2006 has been pretty good at overseeing scouting and player development, putting a plan in place there, and building a minor league system. They had a lot of things go wrong in 2009, but a lot of those same prospects went right in 2010. They were the number one farm system before this trade, and now they're even more distance between them and everyone else, adding Oda Rizzi and to a lesser extent Jeffries. But now, his track record on the major league level is bad. There's no other way to put it. He seems like he doesn't understand on-base percentage. I hate to sound like Rob Nyer here, but I think Rob makes good points. He really doesn't seem to understand that the more you get on base and the fewer outs you make, the more likely your team is to score runs. He doesn't seem like he gets that.
It's almost like
he rejects it.
Well, I was going to say, the last year or – I'll almost give a pass to some of the moves in the last year because I think they've been more understandable. Like, you know, the Jeff Francoeur move can be mocked, understandably. The Melky Cabrera move can be mocked. But at the same time, if you're talking about one-year low-money deals for guys, if you're basically filling spots and also trying to find a shiny bauble that someone else will trade that, you know,
right.
You may be able to trade, which is what they did last year with Scott Pesednik, which they, you know, what they did with Rick Ankiel, those
like
kinds
of. Like Jose Guillen, though. I mean, like.
But before that,
contract.
I was going to say, before that, there have been moves that aren't nearly as defensible. Jose Guillen is not a defensible, you know, contract. Trading for Unesky Betancourt and coming out and saying, here's why we're trading for Betancourt when. The consensus, we're not just talking about, you know, writers writing about it from afar. We're talking about the consensus in the industry was,
right.
what are they seeing in Betancourt because we don't see it.
Right.
And
right.
The problem is that when you make moves like that and they turn out, you get the right to say, hey, we were right. You know, the Giants made some moves last year that, you know, were taking flyers on guys and you're like, well, what? You know, they worked
right.
out.
That did work out.
You get to then say, hey, well, we knew something everyone else didn't.
Right. Or you can just acknowledge you were lucky, but yes.
But in Betancourt's case, you don't get to make that argument when you say, no, he's better than the perception that everyone else has out there. And, oh, yeah, by the way, everyone else ended up being proven right.
Yeah, that's it. I don't necessarily have a lot of confidence in Dayton Moore's ability to fill those holes. So it does seem like he's going to be given the chance, though, by ownership to still be the guy making those calls. When that farm system comes to fruition.
But you know what? I do think if you build a farm system like they've built, I mean, it's amazing that you can be in year five and get that kind of rope to kind of, you know, that length of time to do this.
I agree.
But that also says something for the farm system he's built.
I think
he gets the credit for that.
I agree. To me, if I were the owner of the Royals, first of all, I'd be rich as all get out.
Yes.
It'd be great to have all that Walmart money. Second of all, though, I think I would really scrutinize these next 2 years, not from a win and loss standpoint, but from a process standpoint. I think you want to see, as ownership, is Dayton Moore learning from his mistakes? Or is he going to make more Jose Guillen mistakes? Or is he going to keep on thinking, even if it's just a placeholder for this year, that placeholder should be Jeff Francoeur or Melky Cabrera? Are these guys who clearly don't know how to not be out machines? You know, is he getting better? And then, because you don't want to waste all that talent. So you give
right.
Dayton Moore that chance to learn from those mistakes he's made and to reap the benefits of this farm system he's built. But just because he built that farm system, he doesn't have carte blanche to be that guy who makes those moves in 2012, 2011. Not for me if I'm ownership. I think they have to really honestly scrutinize what he's doing the next 2 years and prove that he can fill those holes and spend that money that you're going to have when these contracts come out. And I think one of the things we both would like to see is, okay, we're not going to contend the next 2 years. We're acknowledging that. Let's see how good Joakim Soria can be. Let's see if he can be a big league starter. Certainly, pitchers have transitioned from closer to starter at the big league level, whether they've done it before or haven't. I mean, C.J. Wilson, starter in the minor leagues, reliever in the big leagues, back to starter. I mean, like, let's see if Joakim Soria can do it, and he certainly has the repertoire for it, and you get a lot more value out of him as a starter than you do as a reliever. And guess what? If it doesn't work, put him back in the bullpen.
And he still has the same value there.
Yeah.
I mean, and the reality is that, look, closing games this year is not going to be a particularly important thing for the 2011 Royals. Because
correct.
We're not talking about you're talking about the difference between winning, you know, 65 and 70 games, or 70 and 75, or 55 and 60.
Generous. Yeah, I mean, 55 and 60 sounds about more right.
You know, but the thing about it is that what's interesting is that when you all your points are good points. At the same time, though, they have built a farm system now where 2012 at least is primarily not going to be acquiring guys to fill holes, because first you need to figure out which guys you need to fill the holes for, because they now, you know, let's assume that Will Myers moves to the outfield, because I think that's a at least a relatively safe assumption that that's going to happen.
I almost wonder with these trades if that buys Will Myers time. I mean, at catcher, because you know, it's not like you're going to be rushing him to the big leagues by 2012 to see if you can win while you have Greinke.
Right. No, if you can, hold off. I mean, that then fills the last, because then you have two guys.
I still like Salvador Perez, too.
Right, I was going to say, then you have two guys at catcher. You know, you have May and Pena and those kind of guys to kind of fill the hole for now. But really what you have then is okay, you say Myers and Perez at catcher. You have Hosmer coming up first, which you already have Billy Butler. So you have one of the things they really have that is useful is a lot of positions, like with the pitching staff, they're going to have seven to eight guys to try to find five. Well, that's much give you a much higher likelihood of finding five.
I agree,
because
they're in a good position. They're not going to have that many holes to fill. That said, I still think they're going to have exactly. There's going to be some attrition here, and I'm not saying Dayton Moore is not the right guy. I'm saying you have to, right now he doesn't look like he's that guy.
Right.
You have to fill some of that. JJ, the last thing I think we should probably talk about is
we got to hit the prospects a little bit. Like we haven't really talked about, like, just a quick run through that. Okay, if you were re-ranking the Royals now,
yeah, where do you put those guys? And to me, I'm not sure Jeremy Jeffress makes that top 10. He's at the back of that.
He's
10.
A 10 at the best.
Is he ahead of Aaron Crow or behind Aaron Crow for you?
That's tough. I would probably.
He's still younger than Aaron Crow. I mean, 4 years out from high school, he's still younger. I think he's a good 2 years younger than Aaron Crow.
I was thinking about that. I would say that you put Odorizzi at, like, probably 9. I would say he goes right behind Chris Dwyer. Like, if I compare him and Chris Dwyer, I'd rather have Chris Dwyer right now. He's left-handed. Okay. Dwyer, I know. I'm a bigger Dwyer believer than you.
You are.
But Dwyer is not much old, you know. Well,
oh, yeah, he is.
He's 2 years older, right? 2 years older, I think.
Yeah, he's a couple of years older. He was a 2009 high school draft at age 20. Odorizzi was a 2008 high school draft at age 18. So
but then you've got.
Even if Odorizzi had gone to 13th grade, like Chris Dwyer did, actually he went to like grade 14.
But,
I know I'm making too much of that, but yeah, he's 2 years
but
younger.
But lefty versus righty, and I really believe, you know, plus fastball, plus curveball. I like that.
Not happy with – I'm not a Chris Dwyer believer in the command, not a believer in the pitchability.
So you would put him above Dwyer.
Dwyer might be a relief pitcher.
But
I think could be a power reliever, but I don't see, like, how Chris Dwyer is a – I think he's going to wind up a reliever.
But
and Jake Odorizzi's athleticism and field of pitch makes him, to me, a
number
two.
Dwyer's athleticism
two
is right there with – I mean, you're talking – no, it is.
We'll see. I'm not a believer in that either. Not to the scouts I talked to last year. He has some athletic ability. He's bigger, more physical guy than Jake Odorizzi. I don't think he's a fluid athlete.
You would have him ahead, but would you put him at probably 8, or would you put him ahead of Duffy?
I think I would put Jake Odorizzi ahead of Danny Duffy as well. I like Danny Duffy, but I like Jake Odorizzi quite a bit. I mean, he's in low A versus
right.
the guys.
That's where I'm
a,
also airing his.
But he's also more. He's athletic, and I like Chris Duffy, but you know. Sometimes his stuff's kind of all over the board, and he quit one time. I mean, that doesn't mean that he's going to quit again. But, yeah, I like Odorizzi. So, to me, Odorizzi would go at 7 ahead of Duffy. Duffy would go to 8. Dwyer would go to 9. But you did the Royals.
And
so
I would say,
at 9.
You know, and I put him at 9. But that's just different. You know,
right.
All
three of those guys are really good prospects,
right.
And all three would be number one for the Brewers.
And all three are top 100 guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's no doubt about that. Okay. So
Aaron
being
Crow
said,
at 10 or Jeremy Jeffress, who a scout who was at the Rising Stars game told me that Jeremy Jeffress and Chris Carpenter in that inning, I thought Carpenter peaked at 99. He said that Carpenter hit 100 on his gun, and that was the first inning ever where he's seen guys in the top half and bottom half of an inning both hit 100 miles an hour, with Jeremy Jeffress at 101 and Carpenter at 99/100.
I mean,
that's
really,
amazing,
when it comes,
this guy's been doing this scouting since like the late 70s.
I could see the argument either way. I'll say this. As a consensus, I would probably say that Jeffress would be 10, Crow would be 11 there, because, like, if you said, okay, let's talk about top 100 guys. I think Jeffress has a better chance of cracking our top 100 than Crow because of the bad, how bad the season was that Crow had.
It's a really tough call.
I mean, really, I think that they're on that borderline right together. Now, the interesting thing with that,
Jeffress is actually only about a year younger than Crow, like 13 months.
The interesting thing with that is that you're talking about two guys who conceivably are both cusp of the top 100 guys.
Yeah.
Which, so what you're saying
is
the Royals.
So is Brett Eibner and so is Jason Adam.
Right. The Royals could have somewhere between
nine
I think, is the safe. I mean, like, they're going to have nine guys in the top 100.
Eight or nine, yeah.
You know? And then on the, if everything broke for them, which probably won't, but to 12.
Because who would be your 13 guy right now? It's like Yasmani, no.
Well, Cuthbert was 13 before, but he moves down. So it was Jason Adam and Brett Eibner. So that's...
Eibner was 10.
Well, one of these is going to be 11. One of these is going to be 11.
Eibner's going to be 11. Adam's going to be 12.
No, I'm saying Jeffress or Crow's going to be 11.
Oh, yeah.
So then Eibner, then Adam, 13, then Chesler, Cuthbert, 14.
I thought you had... who was the Arizona League
pitcher? Tim Collins. No, Tim Collins will be... Tim Collins is would be 14, Chesler Cuthbert 15.
Who's the Arizona League pitchers, the hard-throwing little guys that you had?
Oh, those are like 16 and 17, and they would be – I'm serious when I say this. I'm not joking. They might be number one in the Brewer system.
They would be close to it. They would be really close to it.
Robinson Yambati.
Would you rather have Robinson Yambati, or would you rather have Mark Rogers? I bet if you pulled the 30 organization, you'd probably get 20 Yambatis.
Absolutely.
I mean,
you might get 25. They'd be probably, I mean, the number 15 or 16, Yordani Ventura, number 16 in the Royals.
Is he like 5'11?
Yeah.
Ventura.
Ventura's 99.
99 with like a hellacious breakup, right?
Right. You're talking about that. The number 16.
Try not to laugh.
The number 16 prospect in the Royals system could be number one in the Brewers system.
That's where we are. But the Brewers are going to win probably 30 or 40 more games in the major leagues than the Royals in 2011 and maybe 2012 as well, which, you know, which would you rather have? I'd rather be a Brewers fan right now than a Royals fan. So I'm.
But hey, I'll say this, though.
It's a great trade to talk about for us.
But if I'm a Royals fan, I'd much rather be talking about this team going forward than I would about the 2004, 5, 6, 7, 8, because
that's a good point.
At least there's a, you know, Royals
really
fans always talk about there's the process. Well, but you know what? There is a process compared to the idea of, hey, if we sign Gilmesh and Jose Guillen, we're right there. Or, you know,
that's the thing.
Hey,
if
we can hang on to Carlos Beltran for one more year and maybe everything else breaks right.
In the past decade, the Royals really were like, we really need Alex Gordon to come through. And this is what we were talking about before. We've got to have these couple of guys come through. And right now they have like 15 guys.
If one guy fails, the next guy has to step up.
Yes.
Now, the one thing before we run that I did also want that you talked about, you know, you're hearing now about Jeffress's makeup. You're hearing about Escobar's makeup. But I know that you have a take on this with this trade that, like, they're not the only makeup that should be talked about.
Well, yeah. Well, with Zach Greinke, I don't know if you call him makeup, but, I mean, clearly he's had mental health issues in the past, the way to talk about it. And it is health. It is a medical issue. It's certainly – you can do more about what Zach Greinke has experienced. We seem like we know a little bit more about that than just being a jerk. You know, if Alcides Escobar is a jerk, uncoachable, these kind of things, that's not likely to change. So maybe the guy will grow up.
I was going to say, the one thing I'll say is
he could grow up. About that time, he might also be expensive.
Right.
You know?
That is true. You're always on that balance. But
Zach Greinke, it seems like he can be helped through his mental health issues, but I think it's still an issue. And to me, it's a bigger concern than Jeremy Jeffress smoking weed. I think it's a bigger issue.
But
for me,
And let's clarify on this, that one thing with that is that, yes, if Jeremy Jeffress was not on the 40-man roster, Jeremy Jeffress would be one bad test away.
One toke away from getting
a lifetime minor league ban.
Now let's hope that the Royals know this
and
keep him in the major leagues next year.
All he has to do is be on the 40-man.
Okay, all just on the 40-man.
As long as he's on the 40-man, though, Major League, you know, the union, you cannot test for marijuana.
Yeah.
So,
it's like he's in the NBA or something.
So basically, that becomes, as much as that would be a problem if he was just a minor leaguer, and this is one of the loopholes we're talking about, even when he got hit with the second suspension, was like, well, you know what the Brewers could always do? If he gets hit with a third, you just put him on the 40-man and everything's solved. Because, you know, okay, well, you know, now he couldn't pitch in the minors then, though. That would be the one thing. Now he won't even have to worry about that because he doesn't run the risk of invoking the third test.
Right, right. One last thing to mention about this trade to me is I do think it's interesting that the Royals manager, Ned Yost, saw most of these guys. He didn't see Odorizzi. I think he was the manager in 2008 when they drafted Odorizzi, but like they were in the middle of a pennant race that year.
But he knows Escobar. He knows Kane.
Correct.
He knows Jeffress.
Right. I don't think that's I don't think it's insignificant. I don't think it's a huge factor, but I don't think it hurts when you talk about Escobar's makeup.
He's vouching for these
guys. Right. When you talk about Escobar's makeup, he knows Escobar. He doesn't know him great, but he probably can talk to Brewers players to play with him and say, hey, let's help me out a little bit here. Let's figure this out. So, yeah, I think that's a not insignificant part of it. And Joe Posnanski has a post, by the way, online where I think it's pretty interesting where I always like to see these kind of things. He says, okay, Alcides Escobar was once the top-rated shortstop by Baseball America, their top 100. Who are the other guys who've been the top-rated shortstops in the last decade? What's their track record? Those guys include Brandon Wood, Justin Upton, Joel Guzman, B.J. Upton, Jose Reyes, Wilson Bedement, Antonio Perez, and Rafael Furcal. Pretty mixed bag.
That's about you've got a 50-50 shot there of getting a good, solid, long-term.
I think he tells you how hard it is to develop a shortstop. And then he says that he was also the number 8 prospect in our Midwest League top 20 this year. What is that track record? Who are the last number 8 prospects in the Midwest League, which I think is pretty arbitrary. That list's actually a little better. He's going back to 2006 to 2002 for some reason. Shin-Soo Choo, Felix P.A., Ian Kinsler, Anthony Swarzak, Wade Davis. 3 out of 5 there is pretty good, in my opinion. So I think that's kind of fascinating.
And I did have
I like being the measuring stick for that.
Because one more question. We're going on a long podcast, but we were fired up to talk about this
morning. Yeah, I didn't realize how long it's
Tony gotten. M. Bass tweeted, asked, as the Royals are set up for 2011, who are some of the top talent the Royals can look forward to drafting with the number one pick in 2012?
Well, that's what I'm actually just trying to think of. I was trying to think off the top of my head. The thing is, our college our top freshman last year is a draft-eligible sophomore this year in Matt Perk. So that doesn't help me out a little bit. I can tell you there were 4. If you're looking for guys you might draft high, look at the University of Florida. They had 4 freshman All-Americans in 2010. Let's just look,
they needed
just
a catcher. There's another catcher right
looking
there.
Looking at that team, here's some possible candidates from the college side. I don't have the high school 2012 class off the top of my head. Kenny DeKroger, Stanford. Going to play shortstop this year. Played third base as a freshman. Unsigned second-round pick of the Tampa Bay Rays. Athletic, middle of the diamond player. I'm kind of a Kenny DeKroger fan. Austin Maddox of Florida. Caught some in high school. Third base last year. First base as well. Get a DH and third base this year. He hit 17 home runs as a freshman. I don't know that he's a 1-1 type of guy,
right,
but he's got big, big power, as much power as anybody's got really in college. And you have Kyle Hansen, Justin Jones at Cal. We'll watch for Justin Jones, pretty good left-hander. Was 10-2, 422 plus. He's going to be a free agent in college baseball terms, more than likely at the end of the 2011 season with Cal. This is probably going to be Cal's last season of baseball unless they raise a ton of money. Dark horse, not a 1-1 guy, but one of my favorite 2012 college guys, Marcus Stroman, little 5'10" right-hander at Duke, who's gotten Tom Gordon and a few Tim Lincecum comps for being so short, so athletic, and so easy with plus velocity.
The fair thing to say is that there's not right now the clear guy that jumps out like there have been the last couple of drafts.
No, there's
like
not
Bryce Harper, whatever draft Bryce Harper was going to be in, he was likely going to be 1-1. Anthony Rendon. We've been talking about Garrett Cole. We've been talking about those guys since they basically, you know, arrived in college.
Right. So, I think on our Prospects Plus website, we do have some 2012 lists that are I should have looked at first. That because we have been looking ahead, but that's one we're gonna have to post that answer on Twitter or on Facebook.
Yeah, we'll reply on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, I'll just go ahead and do that on Twitter. That's a great idea. But thanks for the question. Great question. And I think we're pretty much done. I think we've said all we have to say about this trade, which was a lot. But for J.J. Cooper, happy holidays, J.J., to you. We'll see you all week. But to our listeners, obviously, and Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. We'll see you, I believe, in 2 weeks on the next Baseball America podcast here at BaseballAmerica.com. Until then, so long, everybody.